Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. I am joined by a ton of you guys. I got to say, the amount of support that you guys are showing on iTunes is just, it's freaking incredible. Between the last time, last Monday, and when I'm recording right now, it is 11:55 on Sunday night. I make sure to record these as late as possible so as to make sure I get as many of your questions as possible, but that's becoming not really, we've gotten to a point where it's not really a problem. Between last Monday to right now, we have gotten 18 different new reviews, which is just incredible. I really can't thank you guys enough. I got 10 questions and then various things. One here, for example, from Chard K1, it's boom or bust. I had that quite a bit over the last week. All right, look, I grew up on it being boon or bust. Because boon is kind of like a gift that you stumble upon, but it has evolved into becoming more boom or bust, as most people are used to saying it. Either way, my way is an older way of saying it. I am old, so that's why I go with it. But that's besides the point. I got a ton. You guys have shown a ton of love, and I can't thank you enough for it. 5-star reviews with questions. That's how you're going to get your question answered here. If you say that you want a question specifically for Pete or specifically for Harrison next time he makes an appearance, let it be known, and I'll make sure to get those questions to there. If there's a question that I think is better suited for Pete, I'm probably going to hold off on some of those when we talk. And now that we're smack dab in the middle of the offseason, I'm just going to warn you guys, we have some great, great guests lined up coming up. So you guys are going to want to pay attention for that. Enough of me rambling, though. You guys know where to find the show. Megaphone, Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Silverscreen, and Roll. You can follow me on Twitter, at Anthony Irwin LA. You can follow the show on Twitter, at Locked On Lakers. Let's jump straight to this. I'll talk. Look, again, I have 10 questions in front of me. I'm probably going to answer 9 of them. There's a question about Mo Wagner's tweets or screens. All right. There's a question about Mo Wagner's screens that somebody wants me to ask Pete, or there seems like a question that I should ask Pete. The reason I said tweet was because I referred to him as tweet last week, and somebody used that as a joke in the comments here and made us both laugh quite a bit. So we have questions about a Julius Randle sign and trade, how to fill out the bench, my favorite team between 2009 and 2010, a food question for Staples Center, what the ceiling is like if the Lakers just get Paul George and LeBron without Kawhi, why not just wait for Kawhi kind of thing, and then asking me which team I'm pulling for in the World Cup, a question about Aaron Mintz, sandwiches, and what happens if Kawhi does get sent to the Eastern Conference. So we got plenty of stuff to talk about here. The first question comes from Butthurt Trademarked. I got to learn how to do that on my keyboard, the trademark thing. But this is basically, it's a longer question, so I'll just sum it up. Are the Lakers better off signing and trading Randle to San Antonio for Kawhi Leonard? And look, the thing with the sign and trade is, just in general, I'm against it because there are it hard caps what the Lakers are capable of spending. They wanted to get away from sign and trades because it was just another way to make sure that teams kept their superstars. And so if the Lakers sign and trade Randle and bring in Kawhi, that kind of puts a hamper on what they're trying to do, whether it regarding LeBron or Paul George or veteran role players, all that stuff. So it depends on the timing, but generally speaking, I'm pretty much against Julius Randle sign and trade to San Antonio. And the other reason too is because they just don't really, there's no real need to right now, right? Like, the longer this goes on, the more leverage the Lakers have against the Spurs. That's just, it's just math, right? Teams like the Clippers, right, that if Kawhi was that hell-bent on going to L.A., the Clippers were the other option here. And the Clippers had two lottery picks to offer to the Spurs, but they no longer have those. Those are now players. And teams tend to prefer to pick their own guys. And now that they can't do that, they being the Spurs, Well, there went the Clippers' leverage and all this, right? And yes, theoretically, they could send over the two guys that they drafted and Tobias Harris and maybe a future first or whatever as a means to potentially land him. But the Spurs might not like those players that they drafted, right? And maybe it's a spite thing and they want to send Kawhi to L.A., but not to the Lakers because it's the Lakers. And sure, but I still think the Spurs at the end of the day are going to take the best deal here, no matter what that deal, who that deal comes from. And I'll talk about that again later in the show when we get into the Eastern Conference hypothetical. But just generally speaking, I just don't think the Spurs are so petty so as to turn down the best deal, even if it comes from the Lakers. I'm going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the bench. If the Lakers do indeed land Paul George and LeBron, what could they potentially do to fill out the bench? We'll get to that here in a second. So this question comes from Marcus Bautista. They're asking, basically, the Lakers are shooting for max level players. Everybody knows this, but what ability can they do to also improve the bench? And look, I could get into names, but I honestly just don't have the time here, as I have so many questions coming from everybody. And this can be something that we spend a little bit more time on if and when that scenario arises, what options the Lakers have at that point. But just as a broader kind of macro point to make here that's important to make is, as it stands, there is very little free agent money to be spent out there on the market right now. So just on that level alone, Zach Lowe wrote heading into free agency that you're going to see legitimately good, you know, average to good NBA players playing well below market level next season because of the way this market is, it looks like it's going to play out. And so on that level alone, the Lakers would be able to fill out their roster, period, right? There is a such thing as the mid-level free agent bump that guys get from playing with the Lakers. And so just from that thinking alone, the Lakers should be able to land the kind of role players that help take, you know, a good team or a mediocre borderline playoff team into a bona fide playoff team. If they land LeBron and Paul George, though, and become a legitimate title contender, well, now the quality, the echelon of player that you're thinking about in that hypothetical, that the guys that are going to be playing below market level, well, that player now just bumps up a stock, right? The type of player that they'd have access to bumps up a stock, because not only are players going to want to play for the Lakers to get their name out there on a short-term deal to be able to cash in maybe at season's end or in two seasons when everybody has money again. But if that player also has the ability to play with LeBron, well, he gets guys paid, right? And if that player also has the ability to play with LeBron on a good Lakers team that might legitimately contend for a title, well, then that's the kind of payday that free agents that are frustrated with this market might be looking for down the line. And the Lakers and LeBron can help make that play out. So if the Lakers are able to land LeBron, and I'm not doing any reporting here, so anybody, any aggregators, please don't aggregate this. But not that aggregators ever aggregate me. I'm not a reporter. But it's crazy to me how many people out here in L.A. are just operating under the assumption that LeBron is coming. It's wild. And I'm starting to believe it. I'm trying to keep my expectations low. But it's crazy. So that's as far as I can go there comfortably. A question here about the intro and outro music. Look, I made a decision here. I went with the old outro music and I played that in the intro just because it's short, and I like the idea of just getting straight to the show as quickly as possible. But if you guys are listening all the way through, there's a great song on the other end, and I really appreciate the guy who put that together for me. That was really nice of him. Next question comes from Vujicic fan. This they ask, what team do I prefer out of the two championships and the back-to-back seasons that they won, 2009, 2010? Which team did I like most? This is, I'm going off the board here. My favorite team from that era, my favorite season from that era, was actually the 2008 team that lost to the Celtics in the finals. And I will go down, I will die on this hill that I think if Bynum is healthy and Ariza is healthy, that Lakers team beats the big three, even with them being in the, you know, all being healthy. I think it would have been an all-time series. Yes, the Lakers got stomped out and lost in historic fashion, historic blowout fashion. But I still think if Bynum is healthy in that series, he was not, remember. He got hurt, and then the Lakers went out and traded for Powell. But if he's healthy and Ariza is healthy, yes, Ariza played, but he was still kind of dinged up because of, I think it was a broken foot, if I remember correctly. And actually, unfortunately, it was Lamar Odom. It was Lamar Odom's foot who both those guys got hurt. Bynum got hurt, famously dislocating his kneecap because he landed awkwardly on Odom's foot in a game. And then in practice, I think it was Ariza who landed on Odom's foot and broke his foot. So I think if those guys are healthy, I think the Lakers win that series. But actually, the reason I really like that team more than the other two, and it's close, obviously. I really liked it. If I had to choose between 2009 and 2010, I actually liked the 2010 team more. I thought they had more attitude, and beating the Celtics is just great, right? But that 2008 team, it's at some point, maybe I'll podcast about this with you know, Pete, or maybe I'll bring Drew Unga onto this, Drew Ungvari onto this to talk about this. He's like a historian to the nth degree. But that 2008 team started with Kobe asking to play on Pluto. And then the first half of the season, it was will he, won't he, will they, won't they trade him, or will he continue with this trade demand? And Bynum came out of nowhere and showed himself to be a top three center, top five center in the NBA, with the type of ceiling to maybe go even higher than that. And you know, I think there was a game against Seattle that Bynum just dominated, and Kobe, they wind up winning the game, and they asked Kobe afterward, you know, how do you feel about this? And that was the first time that I remember a crack in Kobe's shield there, that he kind of, he said, you know what, I gotta praise Bynum here. And then unfortunately you had the down part of the roller coaster season where Bynum gets hurt. And you're thinking, crap, now we're definitely going to lose Kobe. This is all for nothing. And then the Lakers make a crazy deal, sending Javaris Crittenton, Marc Gasol, and Kwame Brown to Memphis for Powell. And Powell, and you think, you know, I remember Powell and Kobe's first game. It was an immediate, they bonded and they figured out how to play together immediately. And right after that game, Kobe was asked, hey, you know, does this help you kind of take your foot off the pedal here regarding your trade demands? And he said yes, and the rest was history. The Lakers wind up winning. They go to the finals three straight times. They win two of those three times. That was a pretty special run that they had in 2008. I'm going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, I will take a few more of your questions regarding food at Staples Center, regarding Paul George and LeBron, all that good stuff. We'll get to that here in a second. All right, this question comes from David Balderston. Anthony, with three draft picks this year and the potential of two max players coming, I wanted to get your thoughts on if the Lakers would actually put some decent food options in Staples Center. I mean, it's freaking LA, and they advertise that they have Wetzel's Pretzels in multiple sections. Come on, get some good local food up in here. I completely agree. As a fat guy, as somebody who enjoys going to eat at Dodgers games, like the Dodgers are right there, and they have shown like a food that what impact a food culture has on the ambiance, on the vibe inside the arena. In that case, in the Dodgers case, the stadium; in the Lakers case, the arena. And there's so much great local food. I do wonder if there's some issues with the Kings owning the building. Maybe it's some of their choice with the Clippers also inhabiting the building. Maybe it's they have some say in this, and the Kings and the Lakers all kind of came to an agreement. Let's just keep this as simple as we can and go with the brands that most people are most comfortable with. But in general, I'm always for the best food that you can possibly put in a place that I'm going to be spending some time in the building for. So yeah, let's get some better food in there. If you guys have any ideas for food, pass them along to Jeannie. The one thing I will say about Jeannie Buss is she is incredibly welcoming to any kind of ideas. And if the fans really do push hard for better food, I'm sure she would listen. And that's about as good a voice as you're going to get on that kind of issue. All right, moving on. This is from Next Lakers Dynasty. It's looking like the Spurs won't deal with the Lakers for Kawhi. So, hypothetically, if they were able to land Paul George and LeBron and retain Randall, what's the ceiling for this team? I've answered this a couple times. They're asking if they can challenge Golden State. How much will their success develop on the growth of Ingram and Ball? That last point is the key here. I think it makes a lot of sense for the Lakers if they do land Paul George and LeBron. It makes a lot of sense to just get as many veterans in the building as you possibly can, because they're a sure bet, theoretically speaking. But if the Lakers can somehow convince LeBron to stick out, not really necessarily the continued rebuild, right? The rebuild at that point would be complete. The mission accomplished if they walk away with both LeBron and Paul George. But if they can combine, if they can convince those guys to just say, look, just watch what we have in, watch what Lonzo Ball becomes, watch what Brandon Ingram becomes. That makes the Lakers a lot, that raises the ceiling. Now, do Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram have the type of potential, or is it likely that they reach their potential, that they ever are better than a Kemba Walker if he's available, or a Damian Lillard, as some fans prefer, or Kawhi Leonard at the end of next season? Maybe not, but if they do reach their full potential and they do get there, well, now you have cost-controlled players moving forward that help you surround them with better role players. And just look at Golden State. Like, the reason they have reached the pinnacle that they have reached here is because they were patient with Klay Thompson. They were patient with Steph Curry, and they were patient with Draymond Green. And then they added Andre Iguodala. And yes, Harrison Barnes was a part of that young core that they let walk so as to be able to sign Kevin Durant. But the reason they were able to have a chance at that stuff is because when you grow with homegrown players, you have people making closer to market value. And, you know, if you just bring in all veterans, well, now you start to get the bloated cap book the way that you see there in Cleveland, and it becomes really hard to improve your team as you need to improve your team when that time comes. So to actually answer the question, I think that team is capable of getting to the conference finals. I think I don't think they beat Golden State, but I think they at least beat Houston and challenge Golden State in the Western Conference Finals in an incredible series, mind you. And that's the other fun thing in all this, is if the Lakers do land Paul George and LeBron, like, that means that they have the opportunity to potentially play against the Golden State Warriors, because they're a division rival. You could see that those two teams square off against each other upwards of 11 times every year. That'd be so much fun. And that's a great way. I mean, you factor into that the Dodgers and Giants rivalry and the territorial rivalry that you have going there. And that's just, it's a really fun hypothetical. It'd be a really great dynamic and one that the NBA would stand to benefit from. All right, next question here. I'm going to skip it. This is a question about Mo Wagner and the screens that he sets and his ability to help the team in pick and pop kind of situations. It's a kind of a technical question, though, and for those kinds of questions, I like to lean on Pete a little bit more. You guys like to hear Pete more on that stuff anyway, so I'm going to recognize what I'm better at and move on to the next question. And this is about whether or not the Lakers should just kind of wait for Kawhi to become a free agent. And look, I think there's something to that, right? And I think, again, it's just about leverage here, especially when you're dealing with an organization as steady as the Spurs. How best can you make sure that you have as much leverage as possible so as to continue to build the proper team, right? And for the Lakers, if they land Paul George, the lesson to take from that is patience paid off, right? And so if the Lakers land Paul George, they can extend that lesson to Kawhi Leonard. And they can say, yes, if we can land Kawhi for as much as it would hurt, say, Josh Hart and a future first-round pick, or if they can land Kawhi for Ingram and Deng, right, and move off of that deal so that you can maybe potentially keep Randall too, then I think you have to play that out and see how that works. But if the Spurs are asking for multiple high-end assets, like both of Ball and Ingram at this point, even after the draft, then I think it's in their best interest to actually wait this out. If Kawhi goes to a different team, you got to sweat it out a little bit. But you're telling me that Kawhi, who is interested in being a Laker right now without LeBron being on the roster or without being able to play with LeBron and Paul George, that a few months in a different city would somehow change his mind if those guys come? Like, it's hard for me to see that playing out. Now, the cap gets complicated in trying to sign Kawhi after all of that because you're starting to deal with a few more paydays across the roster. But again, it just comes down to when do the Lakers have the most leverage? And they'll have the most leverage as we get closer to the trade deadline. And then beyond the trade deadline, if Kawhi is still unhappy, then they'll have the ability to sway him in free agency. And you can make things work at that point. Next question here. This is from Sad Lakers Fan, and it's a bit of a long one, and it's a good one for me and Pete to talk about. It's about the relationship here between Paul George and the Thunder, and Pete and I are going to talk about that a little bit. But I do want to get to the next one, which is kind of an extension of that conversation here. And this is from SMP616, and it's asking about, I'll just read it. Is it possible that Paul George's agent is leaking that he wants to stay with OKC in order to scare the Lakers into signing Randall to a better deal? Also, I don't buy that San Antonio will only trade to Western Conference teams. Seems like another ploy to ramp up trade value. And that's from Steve. All right, so I have already talked about the second part of that. I'm not going to touch that again. But regarding Aaron Mintz, who is Paul George's agent, and Rob Pelinka, by several accounts, they do not get along. Rob Pelinka and Aaron Mintz were once competitors, and maybe there's some stuff holding over from that relationship. Pelinka did trade D'Angelo Russell to Brooklyn, and there are some who will say that he did that as kind of a favor to Mintz. He sent Russell to a larger market in Brooklyn than he potentially could have. I don't necessarily buy that necessarily because Brooklyn was one of the few teams who could take on Timofey Mozgov's deal. Mintz, right when the season ended, was going out there and openly saying that Pelinka or that Julius Randle didn't feel like a high enough priority for the Lakers. I think that was a shot directly at Pelinka, just letting him know, like, hey, man, I recognize that I have a client that you're really interested in signing, and therefore you'd better treat my other guy right, too. That's how it works as an agent. Like, you leverage everything that you possibly can to be able to get all of your clients the best deals that you possibly can, because one, that's how you get paid, and two, that's how you keep your clients, right? And so for how this is all kind of working out here, there's a lot of reports about how Paul George is really interested in staying in OKC, that he wants to see how things look when Andre Robertson comes back, that he thinks that maybe a team with a fully healthy Thunder team goes further in the playoffs. And there's something to that. Statistically, they were a different team with Robertson in tow. But the problem there is, like, You're telling me that Paul George, somebody who was reportedly hell-bent, and there were two separate reports about his hell-bentedness on coming to the Lakers, is now all of a sudden going to rethink things now that he can actually make that decision because of Andre Roberson? Like, that's where we want to go here? And so if I were the Lakers, I would call that bluff. Maybe it winds up not playing off. Maybe that's how Paul George legitimately feels. And it's perfectly within his right to feel that way. He's a free agent. He has earned himself this opportunity to select where he plays next. I just don't necessarily buy it. I think it is Mintz working to tweak Pelinka while he can so as to get Julius Randle paid while he can. All right, I'm gonna run through. We have two more questions here. This is from Dion Martin. While I still have a little bit of voice here, it turns out talking for 25 straight minutes, not great for your voice. But again, from Dion Martin, they're asking what I put on my sandwiches. If I go to Subway or Jimmy John's or whatever, what I usually go with. I'll keep this simple. You look up on the menu and you see what has the most meat. Usually it's some kind of Italian sub. Right, that has all of the best, the capicolas, the salamis, the prosciuttos, like all of that good stuff. Sometimes you can convince them to put a little bacon on there too. So you get that. Bacon's great because it adds a little bit of texture. I like to keep things fairly simple when it comes to what I add on my sandwiches. I like lettuce. I like peppercini, salt, pepper, either Italian dressing with a little bit of Dijon, or salt and vinegar, again, with a little bit of Dijon. I like those purple onions a little bit. Not too much, because I am married, and I don't want to do that to my wife. But just enough to add an extra little kick in there. And I put that on whatever white bread that they have. That's just how I go there. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I got fat because I like my food. And I tend to have pretty decent taste on these things. So again, most meat that you can possibly throw on there. I stay away from tomato. Tomato is gross. Tomato is like a real love-hate kind of thing. Oh, pickles. Pickles and peppercini as a combo. That's pretty good. If you really want to kick it up a little bit, get those banana peppers and get some of those jalapenos, and you go that way. And you're welcome. Oh, I forgot to answer the second part of the last question. And the reason I just remembered that I forgot to do it is because I blanked on jalapenos, and I'm really ashamed of myself right now. But the team I'm rooting for in the World Cup is Mexico. I am half Mexican. Mom's maiden name is Martinez. They've been really fun to watch so far, and they beat my wife is her maiden name was Bierstadt, which is really German. So I got to buy myself a nice expensive whiskey because I won the bet when Mexico beat them. So viva Mexico. Let's go El Tri. Let's see how this turns out. I'm freaking out because freaking Germany. Like, of course, Mexico wins the first two games. You usually think, cool, we're in the driver's seat. There's no way we're not going to make it. But of course, we have to sweat this out. So I'll be up bright and early Wednesday to watch that game. All right, last question here. This is from Vontae35 about the Kawhi trade. If the Spurs trade Kawhi to the Eastern Conference, what's to stop that team from waiting 60 days to trade with the Lakers because they want Ingram or Ball? That would be one hell of a long play, but you just never see that in the NBA. If you're going to trade for a Kawhi, it's because you think you can convince him to stay there. So if you're Boston, you trade for him. Maybe you send Jaylen Brown or the Sacramento Kings pick that they hold, because the Kings are always going to suck, and it's probably a good bet to think that they are going to continue to suck. But if you're Boston, you think you land Kawhi and you convince him by playing alongside Kyrie Irving and Al Horford and Jason Tatum in potentially an Eastern Conference that doesn't have LeBron in it any longer. And you think, all right, the only team that we have to beat at that point is the Philadelphia 76ers. Does a trip to the finals convince Kawhi Leonard to stick it out and re-sign in Boston? That's how you typically see that play out. Maybe it's Miami, and they can send – I don't think they have the assets personally, especially if the Lakers really get involved here. But – if you're Miami, you don't trade for Kawhi thinking that you go 1 year with him and then work out a sign and trade with the Lakers a year from then to be able to accelerate the rebuild after that. You just never see that in the NBA. So personally, I think, again, like I said earlier, I think if you're the Lakers, you continue to let the Spurs kind of wriggle on the hook that they've made for themselves. And I wrote an article for Silver Screen the other day about how the Spurs haven't necessarily handled this situation very well from a public standpoint. But you, if you're the Lakers, you let them just kind of, you make them get desperate. And the closer that they get to the trade deadline and the closer that they get to losing him outright for nothing, the better the situation looks for the Lakers. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Again, I cannot thank you guys enough for sending either kind words. I really appreciate that. It means a lot to me. I do this for you guys. I mean, I do it because it's a passion, and I'm blessed enough to be able to do this and make a living off of it. But I wouldn't be able to do this without you guys, and I cannot thank you enough for the kind words that you send either on Twitter or here on iTunes. The questions, 10 questions that we got through today. Well, I guess 8 or 9 questions because I left a couple for Pete. But again, 10 questions in a week is freaking incredible. I cannot thank you enough for that. I'm going to be back. Pete's going to be here a day early because we have a couple guests lined up this week. So tomorrow, you're going to listen to Pete and I talk about a couple of the questions that you guys sent in, and then we'll figure out some fun stuff to talk about as well. Have a great rest of your day. We will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks again. Love you guys. Have a great one.